Hi. Before we start the show, by federal law, I have to point out all the Brexits.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
All right, here are the Brexits. There's one over there.
Whatever.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. That's enough. Calm down. You're making a fool of yourself. Calm down. Oh, man, my nose is running like a faucet today. I have seasonal allergies, and the season is all the time. I never had allergies before, but now I got them. It's not horrible. It's just Phlegm City. You been there, Phlegm City? Lovely this part of year. The pollen turns green, lovely shade of yellow later on in the season. It's beautiful in Pollen City. It's where I live. I own the whole city. Yeah. Yep, I'm a slumlord in Pollen City, where phlegm flows like water. You'll find it everywhere, no matter what time of year. It's a beautiful place to live. Children run around with little inhalers. Beautiful place, beautiful place. Phlegm City. How do you spell Phlegm City? Not with an F. No. That'd be Flint, Michigan, where they have a different problem. This is Phlegm City. It's with a PH. And it's lovely there, just lovely this time of year. Cool breeze through the trees, blows that pollen around. You can see it floating through the air. It's very colorful. At night, when the sun... it's about to set. It filters through the flowing pollen, makes beautiful colors. It's lovely. Lovely. It's like the Aurora Borealis. It sounds like a chemical compound that you learn about in chemistry class, doesn't it? If you take some salt and you add some K2Y... and a little Aurora Borealis, then the volcano that you built for science class will start to flow lava. Wow, I did not know that. Did not know that. One of the worst classes I took in school. Ron, what was one of the worst classes you took in school? Funny you should ask me. Because that came out of left field. Thank you. Well, that's the way you are, isn't it? We had a thing called shop class. And I don't know, because you're in Massachusetts. I was brought up in New Jersey for those wonder years with the bread and everything. I was brought up in Teaneck, New Jersey. And in the high school, we had shop class. And one would think that shop class would teach you how to shop. Always make a grocery list. Never shop when you're hungry. And... double check all the refund policies before you shop, and keep your eyes open and keep your cart over to the right at all times, like a flow of traffic you would find in a regular road. When the cashier is checking out your items, look at the screen and make sure that the prices that you believe your items are tagged with are actually what show up on the screen. And that's today's lesson in shop class. Thank you for joining me. Have a nice day. Well, that's not what shop class is. It's not about shopping at all. Although, not a bad idea for a course because you should know how to shop, man. Even on your internet of international highways, you must know how to shop properly. Got to dress properly to shop. Don't shop in your underpants. You'll make silly choices because you look silly. Everybody looks silly in their underpants, don't they? Except for women. They look good. Men in their underpants, it's a whole different deal. It's not pretty. It's kind of like when a man is walking around in his underpants, a woman will say, "Hey, that's disgusting. Put some pants on." When a woman is walking around in her panties, the guys go, "Hello, that's wonderful. Oh, boy." Very, very different, isn't it? I think it's because men have the dangling participle and women have the deep-rooted period. That's kind of like a language juxtaposition joke, isn't it? Uh-huh. Yes, it is. So anyway, getting back to shop class. So shop class had nothing to do with shopping. Shop class had to do with, it was like a workshop kind of thing. There were lathes, which is also a strange word, lathe, which I call the finger sander, because that's all they ultimately did. When you ran out of wood, it would start sanding your finger, and you wouldn't know it until your finger was being sanded. That's what shop class was. We built things basically out of wood. Sometimes metal was involved. And there was a man who would teach this class, which is really woodworking and things like that. And it, the idea of the of shop class, so to speak, was, I think, to have children understand how to build things and not hire people. So, but it didn't matter because I'm Jewish and I hire people anyway. I do nothing myself. Not because I can't do it. Well, actually, it is because I can't do it. That's exactly the reason I do. Anyway, shop class, I remember the teacher's name was Mr. Lentini. Had nothing to do with beans. Mr. Lentini, Italian, obviously. Everything that ends in teeny is either Italian or you drink it. Let me have that martini. Thank you, Mr. Lentini. Mr. Lentini was an interesting man. He had three fingers on one hand and four fingers on the other because obviously he didn't follow his own rules in the woodworking world. And he was down to seven fingers. But, you know, you started with 10, you're down three. You got a couple more to play with, I suppose, at this point. But his fingers were always bandaged up. And I remember sitting in the class going, holy shit, if my teacher is missing fingers from what he's trying to teach me, I don't think this is going to work out well for me. I could be losing all my fingers. I remember the big project one year in shop class. Mr. Lentini said, okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to make beaver lamps. And I thought, A, I don't know what a beaver lamp is. B, I don't know what a beaver lamp is. And C, I don't know what a beaver lamp is. And D, if I found out, I wouldn't tell anybody I made a beaver lamp. Now, I was too young to really know what beaver meant other than that animal who builds dams. And that's the way it stayed back then. So Mr. Lentini said, all right, I'm going to give you a block of wood. And we're going to go to the lathe, and we're going to sketch out on the piece of wood with a pencil the character of a beaver. And I have some beaver patterns for you. One of them is from the Woodland Creature magazine. The other is from the porno shop down the street. So sketch out your beaver, so to speak, girls. And then we're going to go over to the lathe. And we're going to turn your piece of wood into the shape of a beaver. Now, granted, there were no women in shop class, as far as I know. There could have been some pretty hefty lesbian things going on in there that I wasn't aware of, but I don't remember seeing any women. While all the guys were in shop class and woodworking class, all the women were in a class called home economics. That's right, home economics, which had nothing to do with the economy of your home, had nothing to do with learning what mortgage rates are like or how to economically set up your record keeping in your home, had nothing to do with that. It was cooking. It was cooking class. But even then, I guess it was politically incorrect to call a cooking class because that was too feminine. So they called it home economics. Actually, the women should have been taking shop, so to speak, if you know what I mean. That's what she said. I guess when I was growing up, things were very different. Women did their thing, men did their thing, and there was a division, sort of like Trump and the Muslims, or Trump and the Mexicans, or Trump and the anything else's. But that's the way I grew up, man. I mean, and I'm not bigoted at all or anything like that, or racist. I mean, I'm quite the opposite because I'm like a forever hippie, and we didn't even know what those words meant, really. It wasn't in our vocabulary. But the people I grew up with, it was in their vocabulary, and they were racist, and they were bigots, and they did divide the sexes. And women did this, and men did this. I remember going to a party when I was about 18 years old. It was in New York City. And we went to this, it was an Italian couple, and they had just gotten married. They were a little bit older than I was, obviously, but they were young. They just got married, and they had just gotten their first apartment, and they were having a party, a little housewarming thing, or apartment warming, or something. I say just turn up the heat in the place if you're cold, instead of inviting people over, but that's what they did. And we had dinner. There were eight of us, eight people, four couples, and very Italian people, very, very nice, though. They're young. We had the dinner, and then after dinner, the guy said, Okay, guys, let's go smoke a cigar over here in the living room. And the girl counterpart of that couple said, come on, ladies, let's go in the kitchen and talk. So all the men went into the living room and all the women went into the kitchen. And I looked at the girl I was with, who I later hooked up with in a matrimonial sense. We looked at each other, and we both said with our eyes, this is fucked. What's going on here? I didn't want to be with all these stupid men. I didn't know where I wanted to be. And she didn't want to just sit in the kitchen with a gaggle of girls. I remember going into the kitchen and finding it was far more interesting and fun in the kitchen than it was sitting around with cigars talking about sports scores and whether a certain sports enthusiast would argue with another sports. It was just horrible, and I couldn't wait for the night to be over. But there was that division of sexes right after that dinner, man. They divided up male and female. That's the way that was. And I guess in the school system back then, it was that way too. Women went to home economics, and men went to shop class. So we're making the beaver lamps. We're going to the lathe. I think there were like 30 kids in the class. I think about 12 of them lost a finger during that particular project, but no big deal. No big deal. That's why God gave us 10. That was the purpose, just in case. So we finished blocking out the beaver shape of the wood. And then the shop class teacher, Mr. Lentini, held up no fingers, yet he was pointing. He continued to point, but there was no finger there. But the fact that he raised his hand, we figured he must be pointing at something, but we have no idea what, because there's no finger. And he had great trouble flipping somebody off, you know. We just hold up his hand, and he thought he was flipping somebody off, and the people would go, what are you doing? You're just holding your hand up? Oh, fuck you. What? Put a finger up. I don't have any fingers there. The next thing was to drill a hole through the top of the piece of wood to the bottom. And we did that. And then we would pass wire through this block of wood. And we would add a little socket at the top of the block of wood, at the top of the beaver head, and screw that in. And then that was the top of the lamp. And then You fed the wire, the electric wire, through the block of wood to the beaver's feet, and that would go through the base. And then I remember when all was said and done, 72 years later, there was my beaver lamp, to which there was no point whatsoever. I brought the beaver lamp home to my mother at the end of that school year, and it was like a bad Christmas gift, you know, like when you give somebody a Christmas gift and they really don't want it, like it's cologne or something, and the gift recipient opens up the gift, and instead of saying, "Oh my God, this is wonderful," they go, "Ooh, okay, thank you." And they put it down, they open up another gift. That's what it was like. I gave my mother the beaver lamp, and it was wrapped up as a gift. And this is what the shop teacher suggested that I do. Never give somebody a beaver lamp directly. You must wrap it up in gift wrapping to disguise the fact that you're giving somebody a beaver lamp. You just don't do it. You just don't do it. So my mother unwrapped it and she said, "Oh, beaver lamp." And I never saw that beaver lamp again. And you know what? I totally understood. I totally understood that, because nobody in their right mind would display a beaver lamp. You just don't do it. It's not something you do. It's a bad idea. And that was my schooling, man. That's about all I remember from going to school, is making a beaver lamp. I know they taught other stuff, but I don't remember what it was. So.
You're listening to Ron Van Dam on Metro South Podcasting. Oi, he's such a mensch. I mean, a nice mensch, don't get me wrong, but still, really, a mensch.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructosey that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts. I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all natural salt preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved piggy part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original, barbecue, or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
"That's some good piggies."
Professor Parker's preserved piggy parts.
Love my piggy parts. Piggy parts are available where all piggy parts are sold. I especially like the hoof. The hoof. 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 So I am Ron Van Dam, and this is the Ron Van Dam Show. I don't know how I came up with that title. And you can listen to me every weekday. We do a brand new show every weekday. Because it's the internet radio thing, you can listen at any time, anywhere, any place, any one of your ears. It doesn't matter which one. Use them both if you wish. Oh, my nose is... Oh, I'm so itchy. I think I'm going to sneeze. I'm sorry. Either I'm having an orgasm or I'm holding back a sneeze. I can't tell which. I think they're the same with me. If you'd like to reach me, suggest a topic that you wish me to discuss on the program, or just make a comment, I won't respond to you if it's nasty, so don't bother. It's ronvandamshow@gmail.com, ronvandamshow@gmail.com. Happy to hear from you, he said. Or you can go to our new Facebook page, which I really don't give a shit about, which is New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. That's New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. You can go there and like the page, I suppose, is what you're supposed to do, and then have a sandwich, because I don't understand the point of the whole thing. I really don't. I wish there was no Facebook. I hate Facebook. I never even want to hear the word again. I can't do anything on the internet now without Do you want to log in through Facebook? No. No, I don't. Leave me alone with this Facebook crap. What the hell does that even mean? It's demeaning. What does my face have to do with having friends online? Where does my face come into this? It doesn't. We shouldn't be joining friendships because of faces. But we do that, don't they? We go online and we see someone very, very attractive, and we make them a Facebook friend because that's the way they look. You don't have ugly people as Facebook friends. It's wrong. It's wrong to do. Just give them beaver lamps or something, but you don't add them as Facebook friends. You only want pretty people as Facebook friends, right? Uh-huh. Facebook friends. What a stupid, stupid phrase. Facebook. Do you have any friends? No, I'm very, very lonely. But I have like 2,000 Facebook friends. Guess what? You're still lonely. Yeah, guess what? It was my birthday a month ago, and 500 people said happy birthday to me. Wow. How'd you feel? I felt really, really good. Yeah, well, you're still stupid. You don't have 500 Facebook friends. You know, people don't care about it. They don't know who the fuck you are, half these people. They don't even know you. They don't even know what you're... They don't even know you. Don't even use the term friend in such a disparaging manner. They're Facebook hookups. They're Facebook whores is what they are. They're just whoring out their personalities as friends. A friend is somebody that has your back, which is, I don't know anybody has my back. I don't mean as far as being a friend is concerned. I mean the way that it looks. I don't think I have this like big, like little thing on my back, and I don't think anybody else has it, so they don't have my back. But you know what I mean. A friend is someone that'll help you move. In other words, you have no friends. No one will help you move. No one will ever help you move. I will never help anybody move, ever, ever, ever. I did it like twice in my life. The first time, I didn't know what I was getting into. And the second time, I was there, and I couldn't say no because they were already in the process. I dropped in on somebody in the process. And they say, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm moving. Can you help me out? Oh, no. Moving is always worse than you think it is if you're a friend. Or, come on over. I've only got 5 boxes. Okay, I'll help you move. It should only take like half an hour, right? Yeah, just 5 boxes. And you get over to their house. It's like 72,000 boxes. And it takes all day. And the reward for helping somebody all day, you're lifting boxes, your back is killing you because nobody has your back. And at the end of moving all this stuff and you're sweating through your underpants and you're just like totally disgusted and you're feeling horrible. And the guy says, hey, thanks a lot for helping us. Let's get some pizza. Oh, I see. I help you like for 7 hours and my reward is a couple of slices of pizza. Yeah, I'm not doing this again, my friend. No, I'm not doing. If you don't want to be my friend anymore because I'm not helping you move, have a nice day. Goodbye. This friendship ain't going to last, man. I'll help you do anything. I mean, if your wife is horny, I'll help you out. But I am not going to help you move. I am not moving you or anybody that looks like you. I do not have your back. I don't have your back. If your back is being moved, I don't have your back. Nothing's going to happen here. Find another friend. Just make me a Facebook friend where you just like, you know, every once in a while, every 6 years, you say happy birthday. That's the true friend. I have 1,000 Facebook friends. Who are you impressing? Who are you trying to impress with this? Some people might be impressing. Oh, you have a lot of friends. You don't have a lot of friends. You just spend a lot of time on the keyboard searching out people and strangers who... I don't know why. Maybe because you have 3 tits. I have no idea what your fascination is to other people, but it ain't your personality. Because in real life, you have no friends whatsoever. Nobody wants to be with you. You smell, you don't shower, you have a lousy disposition. You're egotistical maniac, just like Trump. You're a horrible, horrible human being.
Yeah, but I have 1,000 friends on Facebook. Shut up with that.
That's the only type of recognition you think you can ever get. You have no friends whatsoever. When you're shopping, I mean, and you're going through the checkout lane, the person doesn't even say, hi, how are you? They don't even say that to you because they don't want anything to do with you. They don't even want to say paper or plastic to you because for fear that may start a conversation, which they don't want to have with you. Because you're not a good person. You're horrible. You're a horrible person. Just horrible. All right, we have a guest today. We're going to have some interesting conversation, and we're going to talk to that guest coming up next. So I don't know how else to entertain you at this point.
You're listening to The Big Show by Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
Okay, let's learn about entrepreneurship, starting your own business. It's pretty cool if you can handle it. Let's speak to our guest.
Hi, Ron.
How are you? How are you, everybody? Ray Leach is the CEO of Jumpstart Incorporated, and Emily Mandel is Vice President of Communications, Polaris Partners Venture Capital. Happy to have you with us today. Hey, this is interesting because a lot of people are going into business for themselves, especially when we had the financial economic problems in 2008. A lot of people said, I'm going to go this on my own here and start my own business. In some cases, it was their only way out. And it started, I think, what I think is a resurgence of entrepreneurship. And I know you guys are involved in this with some great success. Tell me about this startup scale-up event that took place on June 28th.
Yeah, we're really excited. We're going to have a couple thousand entrepreneurs, mainly from Ohio, but from neighboring states, come together with us in a great urban neighborhood of Cleveland called Gordon Square, where we'll have about 90 different individual presenters talking about 40 principal topics that are there to help ambitious entrepreneurs of all types. Mm-hmm. Emily and I have a lot of experience in the venture capital industry, and there'll certainly be a lot of sessions on that, but there'll also be additional sessions for any and all kinds of entrepreneurs. Yeah. To your point, today's economy is really driven by much more entrepreneurial leaders and workers, and so Startup Scale Up is a celebration, really, of bringing together thousands of these entrepreneurs for a day. So we're really excited to host it again this year.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, there's television shows about it. I mean, it's a whole deal now to start your own thing on. And even if you have a full-time job, start your own company on the side. Sometimes they grow to overtake your desk job, whatever the case may be. What advice would you give entrepreneurs? What do they do? Where do they start?
Sure. So I think it's really important if you have an idea. The first thing you do is you want to get it down on paper. You want to write a business plan. Uh-huh. You want to talk about your product or service, why it's different, why people would want to use it. You want to talk about your market and who is going to be buying this service. And then you want to see if you need capital. And that's where Ray and I come in. Yeah. Our firms provide capital and guidance and counsel to small businesses to help them grow.
Do you make those decisions based on whether you think their business would succeed? Is it based on their business plan, their personalities, their financial credence? What is involved here?
Well, you know, for various types of entrepreneurs, there's different criteria that's used to make the decision on whether or not to make an investment. Uh-huh. And when we're using entrepreneurs more broadly, obviously there's venture capital, which is maybe the most stringent or the most demanding kind of capital, and that money's actually buying a stake in the company. Other types of entrepreneurs need a micro loan or maybe a bank loan or a friends and family loan, and the criteria for those might be different. But I would want to emphasize the character and the quality of the individual. Mm-hmm. Is so important regardless of the capital source you're seeking. Yeah. So there's a little saying in the venture capital industry that if you could fund a, you'd rather fund an A person with a B quality plan than the opposite. Because at the end of the day, entrepreneurship is about thinking on your feet and dealing with what comes your way. And an individual that's a great, has great moral and ethical character and a great communicator and a great leader is probably the most important attribute that an entrepreneur or an entrepreneurial team needs to have to be successful.
I agree with you 1,000%. I was an office operations manager for a long time, and I hired people based on personality and aggression, how well they got along with other people, as opposed to their backgrounds, because we could always teach them what to do, but their personalities you can't teach. And that was a number one for me as well. I know that I had heard that in Cleveland there was an upsurge in entrepreneurship, in the sense that economically this area started thriving because of this.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so neat about the work that we do is in the late 1800s and early 1900s, places like Cleveland and industrial centers across the United States were really the Silicon Valley of their day. And Cleveland's success as a large manufacturing city and region ended up manifesting a whole much, much larger economy that lasted about three generations. But starting in the 90s in Cleveland and through the aughts, basically what we saw was Cleveland's economic competitive advantage had deteriorated because so much of the economy was manufacturing driven, and there was globalization and all these different issues. Mm-hmm. So Cleveland's ability and other communities like Akron and Youngstown and Lorain that are in our region, they've really re-embraced entrepreneurship as the most important economic development strategy for a region that needs to recreate itself. And we're really excited that while 10 years ago, Northeast Ohio was woefully underperforming in terms of on a comparative basis to other parts of the country in regards to entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Recently, Forbes magazine talked about Cleveland being the ninth friendliest city in the United States for entrepreneurs. And so there's been a huge culture change in a place where, frankly, you couldn't find many entrepreneurs 10 plus years ago.
Yeah.
And today, entrepreneurship is just as common as any other profession in Northeast Ohio.
Emily, is this about supporting the entrepreneurs, or is this about building the economy in a certain region? I mean, I guess your venture capital has to be creative and has to be on top of things as well.
Absolutely, and I have to give a lot of credit to the Jumpstart organization, because one of the things that is key to creating an entrepreneurial ecosystem or community is you have to have a champion within that community who's going to bring together all of these great thinkers, all of these great ideas through events, through resources, through tools, so that they can come in and learn how to raise capital and build their businesses. And it doesn't happen overnight. You need a really committed team. And that's what the Jumpstart organization does. I'm in here from Boston for the week, and I'm just so excited to see what they've done here, because it really is quite impressive.
Yeah. No, it doesn't happen overnight. It's funny, because these overnight successes, is just because you didn't hear about it before, doesn't mean that it just popped up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You really need to be very dogged. You need to be extremely committed, whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you're supporting the community. It's a never give up attitude, and that's what we're seeing here in Cleveland.
There's one's immediate reaction to protect their idea. I would always be very leery of that. Come up with a great idea, a great business plan, and now my immediate concern is someone else is going to hear about this and do it better than I can.
That's absolutely an issue that is pervasive. Having said that, I think as our economy is becoming more and more entrepreneurial, I think people are getting a better sense and understanding of what they can share and what level of confidence they can have. Entrepreneurship is now a pervasive skill that's needed, whether you have a job or you want to start a business. Mm-hmm. And a key component of entrepreneurship is working with others. So, the classic mad scientist idea, and we do see some of that, because some of the most brilliant innovations are things that nobody's necessarily thought of before.
Right.
So then you have an incredibly brilliant person that you have to build trust with.
Yep.
And help him or her build a team that they can trust.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, people work with people, and those social skills are so important to help founding entrepreneurs develop if they don't have them. Because at the end of the day, all organizations work successfully as teams. There's not, even Steve Jobs, as iconic as Steve Jobs has been in our in our society and our culture needed tens of thousands of workers to realize his vision.
Sure.
And also, I wouldn't let competition deter an entrepreneur from following their dream. There's always going to be an idea. Someone else is always going to have the same idea. It's really how you execute on that idea and how you do it your own way.
Well, the most exciting thing about the whole thing, the whole concept, is that when you're an entrepreneur, that business becomes your baby. And even though you're working your ass off 24/7, it's a work of love. And that's so different and so rewarding. It's a nice way to do things.
It absolutely is. And I think one of the other things that maybe some of your listeners are getting a sense of, you know, economists are saying half the U.S. workforce will be either freelance or entrepreneurial within a decade. This need and desire to build these skills, and that's one of the reasons why there's nonprofits built like Jumpstart all across the United States, helping individuals develop these skills to be successful and to create our country's future.
Great. Hey, how do we get more information?
So you can learn more about Jumpstart at jumpstartinc.org, and you can learn about the programs and services that we offer, which are really focused on Ohio, even though we do help other communities. And then if listeners want to learn about our event tomorrow, it's called startupscaleup.org, and they can go online and learn about the event, and also some of the speakers are going to be at that event if they have a desire to learn more about those individuals.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today, Emily Ray.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it. I mean, it's, you know what I'm saying? It really is rewarding to have your own thing going. Sometimes you have to work really hard. Sometimes you don't. But usually you do. I just think it's amazing anybody would lend anybody money. I would never lend anybody money, ever, ever. No. I don't. I've had so many... Not so many. I've had a few people in my life say, Ron, can I borrow $100? I swear I'll give it back to you next week. And I learned at such an early age that you never lend anybody money that you know. And if you do, don't ever expect it back, because you'll lose that friendship. Not that that means a hell of a lot to me necessarily, because I don't really care. But other people do, because they're Christians. I don't care. I basically don't lend money out at all. But if I do, I have to say to myself, and I'll even say to the other person, you really need to pay me back, but I don't expect it. And they go, what do you mean? I'll pay you back. I don't expect that you will. I just don't expect it. If you weren't asking me for the money, you wouldn't be in that kind of situation where you can pay me back. And see, when you verbalize it, then they say to themselves, well, I'll show him. I'll pay him back like Thursday. I'll pay him back like later this week. I'll show him, calling me a bum that I won't pay him back. I'll show him. And then they do pay me back because I insulted them. It's lovely. I had a friend named Mike, because that was his name. That's why I called him that. And he was, I called him, Challenge Mike. If I needed some help with something, I would never ask him for help, because he'd tell me to get lost. But if I put it in the sense of a challenge to him, he would do it immediately. We used to, I don't know if you're listening, Mike, but I mean, you know, it's true. When I was doing my television show, Mike was like a really cool guy, and he was a cameraman, and he was really great at what he did. And I would say, Mike, tomorrow they're having this event down the street, and I know you're busy. Yeah, I don't know if I can make it. Yeah, I realize that. I don't think you can either. It'd probably be something that you really wouldn't be able to shoot anyway, because it's a complicated situation, and we got to have the audio set up just right, and the guy has to be mic'd perfectly so we can hear him through his microphone. So yeah, you're right. That probably wouldn't work for you. Hey, what are you talking about? I can take the audio would be perfect if I did it, and I can do that. I'll show you. I'll be there tomorrow. I'll show you. And there you go. You just, all you got to do is challenge somebody, and all of a sudden they're gung ho to do it. It's true. try that. Challenge somebody. You bet them that they can't do it, and they'll go, oh, I'll show you. I can do it. And then you got them doing what you want. I bet you can't paint my bedroom. My bedroom is like a sky blue color, and I want to paint it white, which is going to be like two coats, and it's going to be impossible to do. Nobody can paint that room in like an hour. Nobody can. I can do it, Ron. No, you can't. Nobody can put two coats on in a room that size in an hour. I'll show you. Where's that paintbrush? Where's the paint? It's right over here. I'll show you. It's true. It works every time. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm out of time today. I'll be back again tomorrow, at which time I hope you join me once again, because I really had a great time with you today. I don't even know what I'm talking about. I'm just saying, next time, could you put some pants on?